Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted, privileged, and honored to have someone who was an MBA class with me, who's been a successful professional, who's incubated startups, and who's a yoga guru, Arun Tilak. Arun, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ashutosh. Yoga guru, no. Yoga student, yes. And okay. Life student for everything else.
Okay, terrific. Arun was the former vice president, corporate planning and finance of Redstone Resources LLC and STK Homes. He was the former director of Cameron University Startup Incubator. He's been a board member of nonprofits like Center for Creative Living, Roadback Incorporated, and Yoga Alliance. So Arun, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your career or your life?
I'm going to start in the reverse chronological order.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So at the age of 46, mm-hmm. you know, I was doing well in India, doing decently well, but I'd come to a point where I said, do I want to be on the corporate ladder? Mm-hmm. My kids were in primary school and I had an opportunity to come to the US. So, my wife studied here in the 70s and came back. I had my green card pending and I was not taking it because we were very happy where we were. Mm. And just on a whim, we said, well, let's go see what's there. Mm. And so we literally locked our apartment in Bombay, kept everything in place and came here in the summer. Mm. And my wife got a job in the first week as a professor at the university, small town. And I then got a job with the university.
Okay.
So I said, so literally, we had kept our apartment locked. We went back. And so that was a big decision at 46. And a change from the corporate world into
academia,
a completely different environment, which was, like I was mentioning to you some time back, great learning experience at the university. Mm-hmm. So that was one milestone to me. And the latest, that was when I was 46. I mean, a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think it all turned out for the best.
Okay.
The second milestone to me was, I would say, maybe probably in the Pepsi days, setting up Pepsi in India was starting from scratch. We actually started in a small apartment, two people, to set up the entire distribution network for Maharashtra. The two of us, and I was responsible for setting up the Pepsi plant. Lots of learning.
Wow.
And you know, getting stuff. So that was the second one. And I think the first one, career-wise, was 1 year out of out of MBA school, Voltas at that time had an internal audit department. And I think I was one of the first engineer MBAs. So it was a kind of great ground for me to do stuff. And it's a multi-divisional company. I think the hats off to my chairman and the head. In 1 year, I was moved to Muscat to run a joint venture. So those were, I would say, were three milestones which And like I said, before I came here, I took a year off to go to the Yoga Institute. I spent a whole year a yoga teacher. It absolutely changed my life.
Fantastic. So we're going to talk about your yoga because I've heard a lot about it from various friends. But, you know, let's talk first about startups. You know, you are in California, which has always been the home of startups. And you actually ran a startup incubator for a university. So tell me a little bit about the incubator that you were running.
Okay. So, and lots of universities and starting first with smaller towns, even bigger towns, created incubators to do economic development, right? They wanted to have a center and in especially smaller towns, where's the maximum intellectual capital? Typically at a university.
Correct.
So you can get students for internship, which is cheap, not cheap labor, but it's a win-win for both. I don't like to use the word cheap labor. So they're there. You have professors who have, you know, subject matter expertise. You can use them. And you have people in the community where they have someone to come to. So the whole idea was create a space where they come in. You get people with a business idea, you look at it. And my role then as the director of that place was to help guide them in areas or guide them. Probably 99% of the time, I wouldn't have an answer, but I would guide them to the place to get an answer or help them get an answer.
Mm.
And the idea was to grow the economy in these smaller towns.
Mm.
We had all kinds of businesses. I mean, it was just fascinating and interesting.
Okay. And, you know, if as you look back, were there any iconic kind of organizations that came out of that? Or, and if it's confidential, don't talk about
it. No, confidential. I always tell you, very interesting when you say iconic. And we talked about California. And typically, when you think startup, you think about, you know, the IT business or software industry. Mm-hmm. And here I was in Middle America. Mm-hmm. And there was this person who was moving hay. I mean, it's just fascinating what you learn.
Mm.
He was moving grass from Northern America, from Guam, other parts of the country, across the country to shipping it out of Houston, going to Japan and China and Czechoslovakia.
Wow.
Literally, alfalfa and grass.
Mm.
And he, instead of transporting it, we were trying to set up a network where you could do it, innovate technology, do it online, where people who grew the grass could, they could bid for it, and he would have people, because you have to check the protein content in it. But it was fascinating how grass grown in one part of the world was moving all the way across. And it was changing, like 14 hands. So this guy was trying to cut out, like, in everything, arbitrage is being cut out as a business. So a very basic business, but fascinating.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. So, you know, now as you look at your experience, when you look at startups, and I talk to a lot of startup entrepreneurs. So there are lots of questions they keep asking me, you know, and I, so I'm going to ask those from you. So first tell me, what, in your opinion, is the advantage of a startup entrepreneur to go solo versus getting a co-founder?
Okay. I think typically an idea germinates, typically an idea germinates in one person, or you sit across a table and, you know, talk and you have people. The advantage of having a partner or partners is that, you know, very often most people think we're legends in our own minds. And we know everything. But it's so important to have somebody who complements what you have. So you don't have all the strengths. So you have somebody else who has something to complement that. Trust is a huge thing. So, I mean, first thing is solo or partner, I would say, you know, having some trust to begin with and laying the groundwork. So somebody to compliment you, to be a devil's advocate, very important. Because to test, you think you know it, but you need somebody who you trust. And you've probably seen this all the time. Very often people who think they have the best idea don't want to share it. They think it's secret. And this would happen in the incubator. Everyone, oh, I can't tell you this, it's a secret. There is very little vacuum in the world. So I think reality check, a partner is good.
Very nice. And again, as you look back at all the startups that may have passed through your incubator, what, in your opinion, are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
Something that they make is they think they've got, first of all, there must be a problem that they're trying to solve. Sometimes people think they have a solution and then look for a problem. I think that doesn't make sense at all. I want to start a business now. I put a solution. Where's the problem? That doesn't work. Some of the mistakes that they don't make, if it's a product, I had somebody who wanted to make a product and he was looking at all the bells and whistles. And the real thing, I think the mistakes they don't make is validate, validate, validate. I think the most important thing that I would share with them, I said, you know, talk to somebody and ask them, is this what they want? And do you need all the bells and whistles? You know, a minimum viable product. I mean, that's a pretty standard thing people say. Let's get a minimum viable and then add what you need. That's one. The second thing, they don't put any value to their own time. You know, so they, when they start pricing stuff, they don't consider what their value is. So they take, they don't understand the pricing mechanism sometimes. And that's a mistake they make. And so those are the two common mistakes that I very often fall.
Because your second point of entrepreneurs not valuing their time is, I think, a common problem everywhere, because they just assumed, this is my company, I can do anything with it.
Exactly.
And when you get private equity, and I went through the same thing, when you get private equity, they say, but who asked you not to pay yourself?
Exactly. And you talked about this with people, and very often you think of my sweat equity, when do you get paid off? And a lot of the smaller companies, well, you actually didn't IPO, but you sold to someone, right? Now, what is the exit strategy for most of these people? It's unlikely going to be an IPO, most companies, right? it's probably going to be somebody buying you out. And then to get value for that, if you've not put your good value to yourself, you're never going to get value out when you get out.
Correct. Well said. Right? So the other challenge that a lot of startup entrepreneurs make is, when are they ready to scale up? Everyone is talking pan-India, pan-USA, pan. And I've often said, in a country like India, if you just look at Delhi alone, which has got 23 million people, in one part of Delhi and you've got a big population.
Right.
What are your views on scaling up?
Okay. The first thing I think when people say, oh, we've got the market, like you said, 23 million people in Delhi. Even if I take Vasant Vihar and I get 2% of Vasant Vihar, I've got this big market. And so that's the goal. Makes no sense. I mean, there's no way to figure that out. I mean, that's a typical people. Oh, the market is so big. Even if I get 0.2% of so much, on what assumption they've done that? But scaling up, a couple of things is, first of all, don't scale up too fast if you're getting outside capital, because you may be undervaluing yourself. So don't rush into trying to get money. Number two, when you're scaling up, if you're adding people, make sure you have cash flows enough to support, because the first phase of scaling up, you're probably going to be burning cash, right? If it's not your own, if you don't have enough. So I would say you should be cash positive. Now, lots of companies, I mean, we went through the dot-com bust where you had only eyeballs and not cash positive. But if you want to be, in my opinion, think of when you scale up, you're going to add costs and you may not get equal revenues immediately. So at some point of time, you're probably going to have a negative cash flow. So you should be able to weather that period before you think of scaling up. And again, testing the product and validating it.
Very, very interesting.
So what was your thoughts? Because you've done so many of them.
Same, exactly the same thing. I mean, you know, there's this desperate desire that you go all over the world, all over the country, then you realize that you're burning money faster than you're earning it, you know. So.
And the other thing I found out, people, when even if somebody loves what you're doing and is willing to put money, nobody gives you money without wanting control.
Absolutely.
And that's where the ego issues come up. I started this. This is my baby. And now he's taking over. So a lot of the things happen there.
Absolutely. I went through the same problems. One more question on startups for you, and then I'll move to the next part of our conversation. There's again a lot of debate and that goes on when should an entrepreneur raise money? Should you bootstrap as long as possible or should you grab money when it's available? Your views.
I don't think there's one answer that fits all. It depends on where you are at. I don't think there's a definitive one answer. Bootstrap as long as you can, or when you know for sure there's demand. The minute you raise money, and this has happened all over the place, people who give you money want to see you succeed. I mean, they don't give you money to see you fail. So they want to see you succeed. So when they give you money, they want to make sure you succeed. So they bring in a lot of their expertise, right? But then they want control. So are you willing to give up part of that? And so initially what I tell people, instead of looking at venture capital, very often there are very, like you, for example, could be an angel who has experience in the fields you've been in, and you will invest, say, I'm starting a company. If you see there's value, you would bring your money, but you'll bring your expertise. So I should look for somebody who has expertise to what I'm doing besides the money.
Correct. Well said. So I'm going to move to the next part of our conversation on yoga.
Okay.
You said that you took an year off and spent. Right. First, tell me about that experience and why did you?
It was the most fascinating. So I decided, okay, I'd gone the corporate ladder. And I said, from childhood, I'd seen my father when I got up in the morning, he had his feet up in the air. My wife had been to the yoga institute in Bombay. And I said, going through a period, I was doing yoga a little bit and I thought it was more physical. So I went to this yoga institute and you start with small camps before you do a whole year's teacher's training. And it was just fantastic. I mean, to me, it was people came in there as a last resort. There were lots of people. And typically when you're going up the ladder, there are people who are very stressed, who are having family issues, with job issues. And this whole place in Bombay, in a crowded place, this was like an oasis. And the institution doesn't think of only the physical aspects. They go into the philosophy. And it's amazing that some of the philosophy is what today people are talking about, mindfulness and all the rest of it. It's really very old. And so that just fascinated me. So I took it up for a year. And it changed my life. I mean, it just makes me feel great.
Fantastic. And, you know, for our listeners and viewers, do talk about that yoga is much more than the, you know, physical exercise that you do.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, so if you go to the really old philosophy or the Yoga Sutras, which Patanjali has written, out of the 196 aphorisms, there are three that talk about physical aspects. And that's primarily, and so the definition of yoga is, when you start the Sanskrit, is Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now that you've come to yoga, yoga's Chitta Vritti Nirodha, which means stopping the mental modifications. Okay. So that is definition of yoga. It doesn't talk about physical. So you have to be physically, for being mentally fit, physically fit, have to complement each other.
Right.
Well, a lot of it is more about mind, body, breath. And it's just, I mean, it's interesting how we've got. So when I would start a class, just for the fun of it, I would tell people, look around. You've seen your friends and your neighbors. Now, whenever we do a posture or whatever, you can't change a thing about what the next person's doing.
Correct.
Right? So it's not competition. So what can you do for yourself and get to know yourself better? And that was the first thing. So look around, see your friends, now look at yourself.
Well said. Well said. So, you know, a couple of questions for you on yoga. What is making yoga so popular all across the US and the Western world?
So I think what's happening is, so it was physical, but the teachers who've come in have realized that eventually with breath, it does impact your mind. I mean, whether you know it or not, working with your body also keeps you quite flexible, which is important. So I think that's where it's come. That people are also now seeing the benefits of the mental or the meditation. Well, it's not true meditation, but at least mindfulness. So that's why I think it has become popular. Again, people have gone to the extremes of taking yoga to goat yoga, and but the true yoga, and that's what the Yoga Alliance is about, is trying to keep the essence of yoga and the philosophy along with the physical aspects.
Okay, so you know that's an interesting segue to my next question. I was just going to ask, tell me about the Yoga Alliance.
Okay, so Yoga Alliance, years ago, I think in the 90s, there were a few people who realized that people were calling anything yoga. And they were really people who had been to India, worked with some of the gurus in India, and were really dedicated to yoga. So they said, and there are different styles, even in India, you know, you have so many different gurus. But the basic thing is, so let's keep the philosophy and let's have a unity in yoga, which we have some kind of standards. So this was the real, I mean, they worked out of a house of somebody's house and they've got together. Then it's grown a lot. I mean, today we've got, so what the Yoga Alliance does is they set credentials for schools that do yoga teacher training, so that, you know, you have to have so many hours, you must know physiology, anatomy, you must know the philosophy, you must do it. So they set up what all you need to do, how many hours, so that the school has a proper curriculum. So the schools register with Yoga Alliance, and the teachers who graduate from there then are enrolled as Yoga Alliance members. They just kind of registered with Yoga Alliance. And today we have something like 100,000
wow.
teachers who are registered, and internationally.
Wow.
So we have Indian schools are coming on. I'm surprised that Indian schools are joining an American Yoga Alliance to get recognition.
Fantastic.
And the reason I got onto that board, I mean, so the only reason was I was very passionate and interested that we keep the philosophy part of it as much as just the physical part of it. So that's been my interest, and it's purely voluntary.
Fantastic. So one more question before I move to some questions for you personally. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I are of the same vintage. As you look back, for our viewers and listeners, tell me some of the core values you have believed in.
You know, interesting you ask that question. And I think my North Star, I like to call it the North Star, and I was lucky to get into an organization like the Tata Group, the Voltas. Honesty, integrity, and team spirit. I mean, wherever you work as a team, I think having those core values work in the long run. I mean, in the short run, you know, just may not, But absolutely in the long run, they do. I mean, now that we've got 40 years behind us, I can say vouch for that.
I agree. So I'm going to move to the last segment of our conversation. Mm-hmm. Conversation, which is some questions for you personally. Mm-hmm. Success means different things at different stages of life, you know.
Absolutely.
But as you look back now, and as you look at life ahead, mm-hmm. success mean to Arun?
Success to me, and this conversation I've had multiple times with various people, what is success? And it's different for different people. To me, even if I look back at any point of time, a feeling of well-being, you know, you're successful on different fronts, but a generic success to me is a sense of well-being. When I get up in the morning, do I feel happy, content, and have I, you know, have I harmed anybody? Do I need to look over my shoulder? As long as I don't need to look over my shoulder, and I'm well, you know, it's a sense of well-being, I'm extremely successful.
Amazing. And a follow-on question to that, who or what inspires you?
That's another very interesting question. And I just keep thinking of it. There are role models that come up at different times. Absolutely. You know, you look at someone and, wow, if I could learn something from that person. And that could be of any age group and could be of any educational background. I mean, even from a kid, when you see a kid working, sometimes I see a person so focused. I said, my gosh, something I've learned from him. So the inspiration is just looking around. And one of the biggest inspirations sometimes is when I get up. I mean, this week, I'm looking out of my window and little flowers are coming up. I'm looking at nature, how it changes all the time. So there's no constant. And to me, inspiration is, you know, something new. Wow.
Fabulous. My next question, Arun, is that, and I've often thought of this, if you were a role model to meet children who closely followed you and your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
The one thing I would change in myself, but specifically, is never take criticism personally.
Well said.
You know, I mean, nobody gets anything but criticizing you just for the sake of criticizing. Very often we have, and I accept this, I had an ego and I said, oh, I know, why would this buy? Learning, listen deeply to what the person is saying without the filters. I mean, all of us, the minute I see you, I have my history with you, I have my filters with you, but can I look at Ashutosh anew? What is Ashutosh saying to me? Can I listen deeply? I'm trying to do that now, even in this stage of my life. But that's something kids on everybody. You can have your opinions, but listen.
Well said. Well said. My next question to you, and I have time for two more questions. My next question. Okay. Is on failure.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out next month on failure. And I want to say that parents in India, parents in Asia, don't teach children it's okay to fail.
Absolutely.
Come first, go ahead, front of the line, etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns.
Absolutely.
And tell you have 9 cars that in 3 lanes, or everyone want to go first, etc. etc. And yet, fail. My question to you, Arun, is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
Huh, interesting question. Like I said, one of my learnings, like I said, my biggest failure was sometimes I took criticism personally when the person didn't mean that. That was one of the real failures that I think. The second failure, I think, was exactly like you said, our parents, or we are brought up in an environment where you have to succeed. And if you fail, you're scared, everyone will look down upon you. I think that's changing dramatically now. In fact, failure for some of the startups is a kind of token of success. How many times have you failed? It means you've got the resilience to stay on. It's you don't give up. So I think I feel terrible. I should have taken up more risks. I was scared of failure. I would be looked down on failure. I had to be IIT, I had to be this, I had to do well. Not that it's wrong or bad, but just there's nothing wrong in failing as long as you can learn from the failure. So I think I could have learned from some of my failures.
And my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of young people who will be listening to you. What would your advice be to a young individual who's starting off on their corporate journey, you know, as a young 22, 23, 24 year old, like all of us did?
Like I said, sometimes try and get a good mentor. A mentor can be really, really useful. The person has been through the process, has learned something, and is willing to share. So find a good mentor. Two is work with a team. You know, very often we think I will do this and this will happen. And it's, I think it's pretty different in the European context and the US context, where I against we. It's, you can't be successful without anybody, without a team. So realize that you have to work with a team. I think working with people is important, getting a mentor and working hard. I mean, and failing, don't be frightened to fail. Don't ever, you know, and learn from it and fail quickly and get up. Even in the startups, they often say now, you know, start, fail quickly and move on instead of waiting for the final product. So I guess that would.
Arun, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Absolute delight speaking with you. And you've had so many experiences with startup and having done some. So I think at some point in time, you need to be talking about what you would telling hundreds of kids, thousands of kids.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.